Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Right now, the justice system is moving when it comes to Donald Trump, but it is moving slowly. And we saw more evidence of that again today. So while the wheels of justice turn at their own frustrating pace, we want to spend some time talking to people who saw and heard what Donald Trump did in these various cases up close. Jurors might not get to hear from them just yet, but we can hear from them right now. So that's what we're going to do tonight. Former Trump attorney Michael Cohen is standing by, and so is former Trump White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson. But I do want to start in New York City, and the tale today of two Trump trials we saw play out. First, there was a major development in what is often shorthanded as the hush money case, but is actually, and this is important, an election interference case, given, as a reminder, Trump falsified business records to silence a porn star during his 2016 campaign. With Donald Trump sitting in the courtroom today, the judge in that case set the start date of his criminal trial for April 15th. Now, that date does come after a bit of a delay due to a massive document dump by the Department of Justice that happened just days before the trial was supposed to start. But we very well may see the first criminal trial of a former president in just 3 weeks. Also today, in the New York civil fraud case, an appeals court ruled that Trump has 10 additional days to post a reduced bond of $175 million. That is, of course, less than half of the full judgment that was originally due today. And according to the New York Times, the $175 million bond is roughly the amount that Trump's lawyers had argued was the maximum penalty he could have possibly owed. A potential sign, according to the Times, that the court believes the $454 million judgment was too steep. That's a pretty big reprieve for the guy who just this morning woke up facing the very real possibility of a frozen bank account and seized assets that could have included his Westchester golf course, his Florida Social Club, or his beloved New York Trump Tower. And what really struck me about all of this is just how ironic it is that a guy who has railed against a two-tiered system of justice repeatedly has been afforded the kind of leniency that no one else would ever receive. I mean, of course, there is a two-tier justice system in this country, one in desperate need, by the way, of reform. But it is definitely not tiered in the way that Donald Trump is describing. And he's implying that he is the one who is treated worse, when actually the opposite is true. Just consider that under New York state law, Attorney General Letitia James could have enforced the nearly $500 million judgment against Trump last month, but she didn't. She granted him a 30-day grace period to front the money before the appeals court intervened. And I can keep going here, and I will for a little bit, because in Florida, the Trump-appointed judge overseeing his documents case has shown him such blatant favoritism, she's been reviewed twice by a higher court. She is, surprise, surprise, moving at a snail's pace right now and has yet to even decide when that trial will actually begin. It's also worth noting that anyone else who knowingly and improperly retained classified documents would likely have faced travel restrictions or be forced to surrender their passport or even be put in jail, but not Donald Trump. Likewise, in the election interference case, the Supreme Court hit the pause button so they could take up the absurd argument that a president should be able to do whatever he wants, even assassinate a political rival, and be immune from prosecution. And while justice for Trump in that case is delayed indefinitely, hundreds of his supporters, the people who listened to his lies, have faced prison sentences, hundreds of them. But again, not Donald Trump. And back in New York, yes, a trial date was circled on the calendar in the election interference hush money case today. That's a big deal. And the judge actually scolded the Trump team and strongly rejected their arguments to delay. But we were supposed to be covering the start of that trial today, and we are not. So no, Trump is not the victim of a two-tiered system of justice in this country. He's been a beneficiary. There is one system for the powerful, wealthy, and well-connected like Donald Trump, and there is an entirely other system for everyone else. Joining me now is Michael Cohen. He's a former attorney for Donald Trump and the key witness in the Manhattan case. He's the author of the book Revenge, and he's the host of the Mea Culpa and Political Beatdown podcast. Also with us is Christy Greenberg, who was in the courtroom today. She's an MSNBC legal analyst and the former deputy chief of the SDNY criminal division. The perfect people to break this down for all of us. Christy, I want to start with you because you were in the courtroom today. You described the judge as, quote, coming in hot. Explain how the judge got this case kind of back on track today.
Well, so in January, Trump's legal team requested documents from SDNY, and they produced about 200,000 pages of documents. Trump's legal team then goes bananas, says, oh, we've got to dismiss the case, discovery violations for the prosecutors, and adjourn the trial. Well, Donald Trump lost all of those motions decisively today, because the law says the DA's office needs to disclose documents that are relevant and within their custody, control, and possession. And these documents were not relevant. The DA's office was asked how many are relevant. They said less than 300 out of those 200,000. What did Trump's team say? Hemmed and hawed. They couldn't really answer. They said tens of thousands. They really didn't know. At the end of the day, these were bank records that had nothing to do with the case. Special counsel office reports had nothing to do with the case. Phones from Michael Cohen that they already had. And then the question came, well, all these documents from SDNY, were those in the control of the DA's office? Is that really your argument, Todd Blanche, you who were a prosecutor for 9 years at SDNY? And he said, no, they weren't within our control. Essentially, SDNY was a third party. Either Trump or the DA's office could have asked for these documents at any time. They knew that. And Trump's team made a decision. They said, we're going to hold on to this. We're going to sit on our hands. We're going to ask at the last minute. Why did they do that? It's obvious they wanted to torpedo the trial date. So it was a stunning hearing. The judge got really upset at various points and noted that these were really serious allegations against not only the prosecutors, but him as being complicit, and basically said, we're getting this, you know, train back on the tracks. We're setting a trial date. And so not only did Donald Trump lose here, I think you really saw yet again another lawyer for Donald Trump lose his credibility in front of the court and the public today.
I mean, as Christy just very articulately outlined, we're at a point where the judge said, no more of this. He set a trial date. But we've been so focused, Michael, on the kind of delays here and the timing. We lose focus sometimes on what this case is really about. You were a key witness here for people that might have forgotten. Tell us what this case is really about. And what is the jury going to hear from you when the time finally comes?
Yeah, those are all questions that I'm pretty sure that the Manhattan District Attorney prosecutors would prefer that I not get into. So I would definitely like to kick that one off to Christy. But if I can say something about what she just said, which is accurate, the Manhattan District Attorney asked for these records from the Southern District of New York over 1 year ago. And what they received from the Southern District of New York, they turned over to the prosecutors. So I understand why Judge Merchan acted the way that he did as it related to Todd Blanche. And it was rightfully so. Another issue is if you notice what Todd Blanche and the entire Trump team are so persistent at, is trying to attack me, my credibility, to try to figure out a way how to impugn, again, my reputation for the sole purpose of either delaying this trial further or having it knocked off the calendar altogether, which is just, you know, wishful thinking.
Well, you're not going to give us a preview of your testimony. You do know what this trial is about. So let me ask you something different. I mean, you said, as you just alluded to, the judge last week basically rejected Trump's motion seeking to bar your testimony from the upcoming trial. They tried to do that. What should Trump fear most about April 15th? I mean, this trial date is set. What should he be worried about?
Yeah, he should be worried about me. He should be worried about the Manhattan District Attorney, the District Attorney of New York prosecutors. He should be worried about the documentary evidence. He should be worried about all of the witnesses that are going to be coming in to that trial, simply because, as others have also appropriately put it, this is a very simple case. This is a case based upon documentary evidence and corroborating testimony. You know, these documents don't lie, and they paint a very specific picture, one which, of course, does not inure to the benefit of Donald Trump.
Yeah, none question. We're looking forward to watching it in 3 weeks and talking about it. Let me ask you, Christy, because, again, we have a trial date now. I want to get into the heads of what the defense is here. The judge seemed a little skeptical of what they had to offer, but there's a trial date. What do you anticipate their actual defense may be at this trial?
So a few things. They are going to say that these payments, these hush money payments to Stormy Daniels had nothing to do, the purpose of them had nothing to do with campaign finance violations or affecting the election. This was really about his family and Melania not finding out. But that's a hard defense to make unless Donald Trump testifies. I don't know where the evidence for that would come from, if not from Donald Trump himself. So I really think what you're going to see, as Michael points out, is they're going to beat up on Michael on the stand, or do their best to, and really try and attack his credibility and the credibility of the witnesses. But I will say that, you know, the Manhattan DA's office would not have brought this case if they didn't feel that not only did they have strong witness testimony, but that they felt that witness testimony was corroborated by documents. Here you have copies of signed checks that Donald Trump is signing from the Oval Office. You have ledgers. There are documents showing these payments, and they're clearly payments that that the witnesses, not just Michael Cohen, but various others, can explain what the purpose was. And just one thing to point out about the seriousness of this is that, you know, SDNY told the court in Michael Cohen's sentencing for the same crime, for these campaign finance violations, that these were so serious they threatened the fairness of elections and eroded our faith in the electoral process. So if the crime was serious for Michael Cohen, well, then it's certainly serious for Donald Trump, the person who directed Michael Cohen to commit the crime for Donald Trump's benefit. So there's a lot of talk about this not being serious and this being the least serious of the cases. I disagree. This is election interference, and I think we're going to see that in just a few weeks.
A case of the two-tiered justice system. Well, Michael, I'm sure you have thought about, you have been a lawyer, you have been in the courtroom, you have thought about all the things that are going to come at you. A judge overseeing the terms of your probation recently questioned your integrity, suggesting that you committed perjury because you denied under oath that you committed tax evasion after you pleaded guilty to it back in 2018. What are you going to say if Trump's lawyers raise this at trial to attempt to discredit you?
Yeah, once again, this goes right back into the sum and substance of my testimony. Look, I don't think that Judge Furman accurately described it. My attorney, Danya Perry, put it best when she stated that she believed, and I'm going to now paraphrase because she said it much more articulate than I'm going to, that Judge Furman missed the boat on the entire decision. In fact, what he should have been looking at is not only the fact that the Bureau of Probation, the Department of Corrections, endorsed the termination of the supervised release, that he decided not to, but more importantly, that there was even more here. Judge Engoron, out of everybody at the New York Attorney General case, he didn't find Donald Trump credible. He didn't find Don Jr., Eric, Ivanka, Jeff McConney, Alan Weisselberg, their witness. He didn't find any of them credible. But the one person that he did, and he went out of his way to say it, Michael Cohen told the truth. That's page 43 out of the 92-page decision. I think Furman missed the boat here by a mile.
They'll keep trying to discredit you, as you well know. Christy Greenberg, thank you so much. Michael Cohen, stay right where you are. We're going to be back in 60 seconds, and I have more questions for you about Donald Trump's civil fraud case. You have a lot to say, I bet. We'll be right back.
Have you ever wondered what the stars have to say about your favorite artists and writers? Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa, where I, your host and astrologer, Issa Nakazawa, read and interpret astrological birth charts of luminaries like W. Kamau Bell, Gia Tolentino, and so many more. You'll discover how astrology can unlock fascinating insights about these stars, and who knows, maybe you'll learn a little bit more about yourself. Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa wherever you get your podcasts.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
A And what was unquestionably a bizarre and rambling press conference today, Donald Trump made several new claims about his personal finances. Among other things, he said he could afford to post the reduced bond requirement of $175 million, claiming he'll put it up very quickly.
We'll put up cash or bond very quickly, securities, cash or bond, whatever it is.
Can you give us a little bit more detail about the timing of when you plan to secure the bond and how exactly you're planning to pay the bond?
Well, as I say, I have a lot of cash.
And while Trump also said he didn't need financial help from a foreign government or entity, he notably defended his right to do so. Former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen stuck with us. He's standing by and back with me now. So, Michael, let's talk about what Donald Trump said today, that he will post his reduced amount of $175 million very quickly. What do you think? Can he do that?
Look, it's certainly a whole lot less than the $500 million that he was looking for, that he could not get, that his son Eric was crying on television, that this is something that nobody has ever had to do before. They were obviously unable to do it. Do I think that he can raise the $175 million? The answer is most probably. It's certainly, like I said, a lot less than the $500 million. There are things that he can do. You know, one of the things that I was saying earlier today is I wish that Tish James had reached out to me. I would show her exactly where the money is for the $500 million that she should have gone after a long time ago instead of giving him the opportunity of 30 days to raise this bond. Look, the situation is what it is. Do I think he will do it?
There's a good offer.
Sure, but he's going to also, yeah. Well, she certainly could. I will say that, the $175 is a lot easier for him to raise than the $500.
I was interested in what your thought was on what he said about taking foreign money. I mean, he said, I think you'd be allowed to, but I don't need to borrow money. You know, we've been in his head. What do you make of that response? What does it mean to you?
Yeah, nothing that, you know, that Donald Trump is lying when his lips are moving. He knows that he's probably reaching out to foreign entities or foreign individuals. And so he wants to just make sure that he's, you know, putting this out there in advance of him actually doing it, because that's what he intends to do. He doesn't say things, you know, just haphazardly. There's always a reason behind his insanity. And this is just another one of them. He couldn't get it domestically. And so he'd rather try to reach out to anyone that will give him the money, as long as he doesn't have to post his own money. I mean, that's just who he is. And my prediction, he will wait till the absolute last day, day 10, before which he posts, whether it's cash, which it won't be, or a bond. And we will not know where that bond was secured from. And Jen, I've also said this on a ton of shows already. This is the part that we all as Americans need to be extremely, extremely careful of. Because if it is a foreign entity, imagine, God forbid a million times, that Trump becomes president. That foreign entity will own the president of the United States of America. Now, if he does get it domestically, could you imagine we also have a president who was significantly compromised for somebody who had done him the major favor of giving him, whether it's $175 million or $500 million? It places America's national security
no
in a
question.
Very precarious situation.
No matter who it is. Well, let me ask you this, because I agree with you. This is a really important thing for people to understand. You're obviously not advising him, but you do know who he has close relationships with. Who would you think he's reaching out to? Who should Americans be concerned he might owe something to?
Well, are you talking about domestically or are you talking
about foreign?
If it's domestic,
yeah.
Just take a look at the list. Yeah, well, can we hit the domestic one first? Just take
sure.
a look at the membership list over at Mar-a-Lago, right? I mean, you know, we already saw that he showed top secret documents to an Australian billionaire, right? There's plenty of billionaires that hang out with him over at Mar-a-Lago, and each and every one of them sees Donald Trump as a fool and that they think that they can get something out of him, because most of these mega billionaires actually did get stuff out of him while he was the president. As far as foreign Karen? I mean, look, he's talking about his love affair with with Kim Jong-un, his great respect for Vladimir Putin, his great friendship with Xi Jinping. You have Mohammed bin Salman that, for whatever the reason might be, gave over $2 billion to Jared Kushner, who's never been in the finance world before. Right? I mean, there are plenty of really wealthy autocrats out there that would be more than happy to loan Donald money, especially if they know they can own him if he becomes the president.
Michael Cohen, thank you for always being direct and for hanging with me tonight through through the first part of our show. I really appreciate you joining us. And coming up, former Trump White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson is here in studio for her first live interview in months. She's been the subject of more right-wing attacks over the past few weeks, and she's ready to talk about it. We're back after a quick break. It's been nearly 2 years since former Trump White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson gave her bombshell public testimony to the House Select Committee investigating January 6th. And of all the things she said she testified about, arguably the most jaw-dropping, we were all watching it, was a story she said she was told secondhand by a deputy chief of staff about how then-President Trump was so irate and insistent to go to the Capitol on January 6th that he lunged for the steering wheel. Now, for years, Trump and his allies have tried to rewrite the history of January 6th. We see this every day. And just in the past month, Republicans have attacked Hutchinson's credibility based on a new report that seeks to undermine the January 6th committee's findings. House Republicans cite unnamed Trump White House staffers who claim things like they didn't hear about weapons in the crowd and that Trump didn't lunge for the steering wheel. MAGA World immediately seized on the report, and Trump himself posted on his social media site, "Will she be prosecuted for what she did and said?" But what they failed to mention is that the core of Hutchinson's testimony, that Trump wanted to go to the Capitol on January 6th, was corroborated in that Republican report I just mentioned. In fact, it says that a White House employee was told that Trump was irate on the drive back to the White House. And in a transcript of the Secret Service agent driving Trump on January 6th that was reviewed by the New York Times, the agent said that while he did not see Trump reach for the steering wheel, Trump was insistent on going to the Capitol. It was clear he wanted to go to the Capitol. That's the point. Joining me now is former Trump White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson. First of all, I want to say it's incredibly courageous that you speak out, and I appreciate you being here tonight. It's so important for people to hear your voice on all of this.
Thank you for having me back.
Let me start with this. It's been a while, of course, since we sat down together, and in that time, as I just mentioned, Trump, a number of his allies, have attacked you personally. I mean, as I just said, Trump posted, "Will she be prosecuted for what she did and said?" What is your response to that?
You know, Jen, I had been part of the Trump administration for several years, and I know when he starts to get nervous. I know that Donald Trump has to be nervous, if not extremely frightened right now, because what is happening is he is deploying his most loyal allies on Capitol Hill to try to discredit not only my testimony, but the entire January 6th investigation as a whole. The facts are out there, and he doesn't want the facts out there because he doesn't want the American people to know what actually happened. He's hoping that his false narrative of what happened on January 6th is what the American people will believe heading up to the November election. And it's really imperative that we keep speaking about the truth because the facts are the facts. And Donald Trump has tried to smear those with his deceit and his lies. Now, what I will say to that, too, though, is when you mentioned the report, much of my testimony is corroborated. But there also is one key piece, and that's the fact that he knew that there were weapons in the crowd. Mm. His Secret Service agents testified that he was aware that that's why they were not coming through the magnetometers. That's a key piece of evidence for the American people to know and for the jury, hopefully, that will convened before the election, because it speaks to his state of mind. And it also is reported that only one hour after he got back from the Ellipse, he called Kevin McCarthy and said that it was Antifa attacking the Capitol. But he also said that they were his people. So, you know, all this being said, Jen, Donald Trump lashes out when he feels threatened. And he's lashing out right now because he does not want the American people to know that he was responsible for the single most egregious attack on our democracy.
There's no question. I think it's so interesting you pose it as he feels threatened. It feels right to me. He also, though, there's a lot of people like yourself who've been speaking out who might be witnesses here. Do you feel that he is trying to publicly pressure you?
You know, it's hard to climb into his psyche, and it's not something that I really would love to do. I would anticipate it being a fairly dark place to be. But what I will say to that, you know, pushing aside my case, you know, there are times where I do get really discouraged, and I wouldn't, and I want to be honest about that. It is difficult, especially when there are some of my former friends and colleagues who I know better, and members of Congress that I worked really closely with, amplifying his lies. But I think when we look at the bigger picture, he's not just threatening this with me. He's threatening it with Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, people who served on the January 6th committee. He's threatening other potential witnesses in other cases, that federal indictments that have come down, potential jurors, judges. There are a large swath of Americans that may need security going into this next year because he has committed to unleashing political violence on these people. That's not what a leader does, and we're expecting him to be the Republican nominee again. He's there to support the people of America, not to silence them. A leader empowers people, they don't lead through fear.
I wanted to get your thought. Sarah Matthews, a friend of yours, has been on this show, and she said something that's really stuck with me, and I think it's applicable too. I wanted to play that and talk to you a little bit about that too.
Obviously, we look around and it's mainly the women and especially young women who are speaking out. And so I would just encourage maybe the men who are twice my age, who held way higher positions of power than me, who also know that Donald Trump is unfit to serve, to speak out. And I know that we've got some time before Election Day, but I'm hoping that as we get closer and they see the threat that Donald Trump is and the very real chance that he could be president again, that they will come forward.
I think it's so important to state here, both of you spoke out in your 20s. Young women who believed, who were Republican, who supported the Republican Party, supported Trump, spoke out because it wasn't right in your 20s. There are a lot of people, including older men, and she said it, but I'm going to repeat it, who have not. Do you wish they would?
Of course, I wish anybody would that was in the administration, that maybe not even until January 6th, but people that know Donald Trump's character. When we evaluate the politicians that we elect to office, policy is important, but especially in this period in American history, character takes precedent over policy positions. When we look at this election, you know, there have been more people that have spoken out, but what I take issue with is when they speak out once or twice and expect that to be enough.
And they're quiet then after that.
Exactly. Trump World has an effective mechanism where they do hold a megaphone to the American people, where they use that megaphone to spread conspiracy theories and lies. And that's how they manipulate and seduce people to believing what Donald Trump says. We need people who are on the inside to do the exact same thing, but to speak truth to the power of the lies that Donald Trump has done. Otherwise, we might be tumbling towards a dictatorship.
Cassidy, I have so much more I want to ask you with. I hope you can stick around for just one more block
with
me. I appreciate it. We'll be right back with Cassidy Hutchinson. Stay with us. We're back with former Trump White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson, and I want to play you a moment from an interview 60 Minutes did with Congressman Jim Jordan just last night that I think was pretty revealing, but I want to know your thoughts on it. So let's play that, and we'll talk about it on the other side.
What I've said is there were concerns about the 2020 election. I think Americans agree with that.
No, they don't.
You don't think they think there were concerns with the 2020 election?
Most people don't question the result. That's all I'm saying. They don't question whether Biden won or not. Right. Most people don't question the outcome.
Right.
I mean, that was an awkward silence there. I would say I sort of felt bad for him. I didn't really. What does that tell you about this position and commitment to denying the events of January 6th? And does it tell you about what people should be doing about maybe holding more people accountable like that?
Well, I absolutely agree with that point. And just to point out to you, Jenna, I think that might be the first time I've seen Jim Jordan completely silent when confronted with the truth, which also goes to show how Republicans are grasping at the straws. Mm-hmm. They are doing everything they can to make sure that the truth isn't out there. But there is going to be a point, whether it's in this next election cycle or in the years to come, when the truth is going to catch up. And the truth always prevails. And history is going to look poorly upon these people who have spouted the conspiracy theories and lies in the ways that Jim Jordan has. But it's not just Jim Jordan. The entire House Republican conference right now is a complete disgrace, not only to the Republican Party, but to Americans. As important as it is to make sure that Donald Trump never gets near the Oval Office again, we also need to focus on Congress and to make sure that everybody in Congress who has been an enabler of Donald Trump, people like Jim Jordan, people like Elise Stefanik and Nancy Mace, who have devoted their careers in this part of American history to becoming loyal foot soldiers of Donald Trump. They are lying to their constituents and they do not deserve to serve in that body.
You know, some of those people and many more are afraid. You hear this, people talk, have this conversation in Congress. They say things quietly. They won't say it publicly. You're not afraid. Or if you are afraid, you're speaking out. What do you say to people who are fearful of their political future, of even retribution from Trump about what this moment is about?
For fear of the political future, you know, I would say that's based in craven political ambition, and it's a complete disgrace. When you run for office, you take an oath, and you swear that oath to defend and protect the United States Constitution. You don't swear to protect an individual who is more concerned about protecting themselves and to keeping themselves out of jail, as Donald Trump is. I do want to acknowledge, though, that there are very real security threats. For me, that's not enough of a reason to not use my voice and the platform that I very graciously have now to educate the American people on the dangers of Donald Trump. I believe that every single member of Congress and every single elected official and every person in the media has an obligation, a civic obligation, to continue educating the American people so they understand that we're not catastrophizing what a second Trump term could look like. We're not lying or over-exaggerating his lack of character and how devoid he is of any emotion. We're telling the truth about all of this. And if we do not keep doing this for the next 8 months, and if he happens to be elected again, you know, the shame and the blame and blaze falls on us, because we need to be doing everything that we can, regardless of the outcome, in order to secure our country for our future generations, but also our place on the world stage.
I want to just end with something more personal. I mean, you talked recently and you wrote in your book about your father's admiration of Donald Trump as emblematic of the way he, as you say, manipulates his supporters. That is Donald Trump. And you still consider yourself you have conservative values. You obviously have been speaking out, but on policy issues, you may have alignment with a number of the people who aren't speaking out. What should we kind of understand about why these tactics are working with Trump's base in terms of him convincing them he is a billionaire, he's a successful businessman, he's going to defend them? What are people who aren't his supporters not understanding about why that works?
Donald Trump has built his entire career from his early days as a quote-unquote businessman all the way through his term in office on a facade that he is strong, that he is powerful, that he is brilliant, and that he has all this money because he's been able to accumulate it on his own. You know, the anecdote you were speaking about is a moment that I shared in the book and also in different public forums with my father. My father really looked towards Donald Trump as the sort of the pinnacle of the American dream. He believed in Donald Trump, and he believed that he was the person that he could learn from to be a better businessman. Donald Trump brought a whole new constituency of voters in 2016 that had felt disenfranchised, but he also inspired them. You know, I voted for Donald Trump in 2016 because I also felt that I could believe in him. I felt that he was there to actually lead the country through a difficult period, and I felt that he was the person to do it. I look back now and I see how disingenuous he is. I see how he has manipulated and seduced people to believing his lies, and he has done that somewhat successfully. But right now we see his house of cards beginning to fall. He's avoided accountability for his entire life, but there are multiple criminal cases across in the federal government and in state governments. And the outcomes aren't likely to rule in Donald Trump's favor. He doesn't want people to know who he actually is. That is the biggest threat to Donald Trump's ego. But that's also the way that we get out from this moment. But in order to get out, it's not just making sure that Donald Trump isn't reelected. We have to make sure that we welcome people back. And we do that by having conversations where people feel they're being listened to. We don't shame people out of their belief systems, and they really do believe in this man. And I feel for them. I feel that they have this false sense of hope in somebody who is taking their money, their hard-earned money, and they actually believe that he is there to serve them, when in reality, Donald Trump doesn't want to end up in prison. So we need to make sure that when the day comes when Donald Trump is no longer a political force, we work on having these productive conversations so we can come back stronger as a country.
Cassie Hutchinson, you define punching back at bullies verbally and not letting anyone cower you. Thank you for being on tonight, for speaking truth, and for being so candid with us about your experiences. I'm sure it's been very difficult. It's very courageous of you to speak out.
Thank you, Jen.
Coming up, some thoughts from me about former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel.
Do you find yourself searching for true crime podcasts that are different from what you're always recommended? Do you want to make a real difference in the cases that you're following? Well, you're a crime junkie, and I'm Ashley Flowers, the creator and host of the number one true crime podcast, Crime Junkie. There are hundreds of episodes already available, and each Monday we dive into the details of cases spanning from some of the most infamous to those that you have never heard covered before. Listen to Crime Junkie podcast now, wherever you're listening.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style, and you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
That's next after a quick break. You may have seen some news over the last few days about the hiring of former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel as an NBC News contributor. And some, mainly in the right-wing ecosystem, have made the comparison to others who have come from government or politics into the media, including me. And that is a comparison I felt like I had to address. I got into public service for the same reason that many people do, to serve the American people. I worked on my first political campaign when I was just 24 years old. When I was 28, I packed my bags, I moved to Chicago to work for Barack Obama. He wanted to make the country a better place, and I wanted to help him. I wanted to work on behalf of the American people, to try to make their lives better. That's why I did campaigns. And a few years later, I would do the same thing for President Biden when I went to work for him in the White House. I was in the room for tough debates, for difficult decisions, for the messy and at times incredibly grueling process of governing. And that experience is something that I'm extremely proud to bring to this table and to this network. And there are many others who have followed a similar path, who I have a great deal of respect for. But here's the thing. That kind of experience only matters and only has value to viewers, all of you, if it is paired with honesty and with good faith. Those qualities are especially important right now, at a time when our institutions are under attack and when our democracy is in danger. And our democracy is in danger because of the lies that people like Ronna McDaniel have pushed on this country. To quote Liz Cheney, Ronna facilitated Trump's corrupt fake elector plot and his effort to pressure Michigan officials not to certify the legitimate election outcome. She spread his lies and called January 6th legitimate political discourse. Look, this isn't about Republicans versus Democrats. This isn't about red versus blue. This is about truth versus lies. Service to the country versus service to one man committed to toppling our democratic system. That is the type of experience that Ronna McDaniel brings to the table. And that experience does not get us to a deeper understanding of anything in the public debate. We'll be right back. Every once in a while, we have to take a step back and acknowledge just how absurd the state of our politics is. Last night, on the eve of an appearance in criminal court we've been talking about on this show, Donald Trump was celebrating. Quote, "It is my great honor to be at Trump International Golf Club in West Palm Beach tonight, awards night, to receive the club championship trophy and the senior club championship trophy. I won both." President Biden's response, "Congratulations, Donald. Quite the accomplishment." Joining me now is former Senator Al Franken. He's now the host of the Al Franken podcast. Senator, it's great to see you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me tonight. I wanted to start there. I mean, it seems silly, but it does reveal something about Donald Trump that he feels the need to brag about golf tournaments at courses he owns. But increasingly, it also seems like President Biden is kind of willing to troll him and poke fun at him. There are a lot of ways to go at Trump. What do you think about that approach?
Well, I think he was just a sincere congratulations on winning the tournament and the senior tournament. I mean, it's why would anyone write that other than Donald Trump? You don't believe
question.
Him, first of all. Yeah.
Good question. I hear he might be a little bit of a golf cheater, I hear, or that's been written, so that none of that's a surprise. In all seriousness, I mean, a part of Trump, I mean, even though that's absurd, he's bragging about these golf tournaments, but a part of him thinks his strategy is winning, and some of it might be. I mean, after his hearing in Manhattan today, he was asked if his conviction would cause him to lose the election, and he answered that it could actually make him more popular. That sounds absurd. It's depressing to even entertain that. But, you know, you're on the outside now, but you've been in the Senate. Are you worried that some part of that could be right?
Yeah, with him, you never know. I mean, his people have stuck with him through thick and thin. And I actually think I've heard a certain percentage of Trump supporters say that if he is a convicted felon, they will abandon him. So I don't think it's true. But this is, you know, this is the weirdest guy, and his followers follow him in the weirdest places.
That's very true. I mean, as you're watching this and you see all the different messages the Democratic Party is throwing at him, right? There's a lot of material there. I think there's no question. There's the legal cases. There's obviously his threat to abortion rights. There's his threat to the Affordable Care Act. There's what he would do to working men and women. What should people be doing? There's almost too many to pick from. What is the right approach in your view?
Well, the right approach is to go door to door and knock on door, especially in blue areas, and get out the vote. That's the right thing for people watching today, watch MSNBC and care about this election, is to get involved and to do that. That's the right what the right argument is. I think that as these cases unfold, and thank God we actually have one coming to trial, I think mm-hmm. it'll be very clear. You started your show talking to Michael Cohen, and I think it's pretty clear that this hush money case was exactly that, a hush money case. And I'm looking forward to. I don't know whether he will testify. I know his lawyers know that he lies a lot, but I hope he testifies, because when he puts that hand on the Bible, I want to see it burst in the flames.
He might. I mean, I think we'd all be interested in seeing him testify. Let me ask you a little bit about what's going on the Republican side of the aisle in Congress, because you know well, better than most people, that people have all sorts of different conversations behind the scenes that may not be in public. I mean, your Republican colleague, former Republican colleague in the Senate, Lisa Murkowski, said yesterday that she's open to leaving the party, open to becoming an independent. We'll see. She said that, quote, "I just regret that our party is seemingly becoming a party of Donald Trump." How many Republican mm-hmm. senators do you think share that view but just won't say it publicly? Is there a buzz about that, do you think, and they just won't say it out loud?
Oh, yeah, but I think it depends what state you come from. I know some in very solidly red states who will share with me that they do not like Donald Trump, but they have no choice. Now, Lisa in Alaska, she won a three-way race, I think two races ago, and she has won as an independent, and I can see her abandoning the Republican Party, because she can do it in that state.
Let me ask you, before I let you go and before we turn it over to Rachel Maddow, of course, about the Democratic side, because you now have the perspective on what everybody's working on. What should their focus be? I know you said door knocking, that's an important thing. What are you worried about most, and what should their focus be going into November?
Well, I think it's a very it's going to be a tough year. It's going to be a very close election. And I won my first race by 312 votes. And we saw, you know, 11,779 in Georgia. So it's going to be these battleground states. And those are the states that we have to focus on. And we have to give money in those states and get out the vote and do ground game and work those states. So it's Wisconsin, it's Michigan, it's Pennsylvania. We know what it is, right?
We do, certainly. Senator Al Franken, your testament to every vote counting. Thank you for joining me. That does it for me tonight.
Do you find yourself searching for true crime podcasts that are different from what you're always recommended? Do you want to make a real difference in the cases that you're following? Well, you're a crime junkie. And I'm Ashley Flowers, the creator and host of the number one true crime podcast, Crime Junkie. There are hundreds of episodes already available, and each Monday we dive into the details of cases spanning from some of the most infamous to those that you have never heard covered before. Listen to Crime Junkie podcast now, wherever you're listening.